The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Greg Wilshusen. He's the Director of Information Security Issues at the GAO. And the reason why I brought Greg in, because I was at an event and I heard a young man speak by the name of Nick, I think Marinos, is it? And I was sitting in the audience going, this guy's really smart. And I said, he really has a great perspective. And I thought, you know, there may be listeners who may be interested in what the GAO does. And so I went up to Nick and I said, hey, Nick, I'd love to get you in the studio and give me a top 10 list on what to do for when you get an audit. He said, well, John, it might not be that simple. And I said, oh, come on. He said, no, it may not be that simple. And I said, well, let's bring in someone who gives maybe an overview of what the GAO does and what my listeners can do to benefit from these audits. Because, you know, everyone's afraid of an audit. Hear the word audit. It's almost like a four-letter word, except it's a five-letter word. It's almost a four-letter word, and people are scared of it. But I think if we brought in a normal, reasonable human being like Greg in the studio, and he talked about the GAO, he said, here's what we do, here's what we don't do, here's who you can prepare, I think it'll take the lid off a lot of this fear and loathing of auditors. So before we begin, Greg, tell us about your background and how you wound up working at the GAO, please.
Okay, sure. Well, I'm originally from St. Louis and graduated from the University of Missouri back in 1979.
Mizzou.
Mizzou, that's right. And after graduating from Mizzou, I started work with the U.S. Army Audit Agency out of St. Louis. And after 2 years working with Army Audit in St. Louis, I was fortunate enough to go over to Europe with the agency and work 3 years in Heidelberg, Germany, auditing various different programs within the Department of Army. And it would cover the whole gamut of functions and capabilities of the Department of Army. We typically would do economy and efficiency audits where we would evaluate different programs to see how well they're being operated. After returning to Washington, D.C. with Army Audit for a couple years, I ended up going to the private sector and working for a firm called Irving Burton Associates, where we performed contractual work to different federal agencies, again, performing financial management type of functions and reviews, as well as audit services.
Kind of like National League, American League.
Kind of, for a while. Indeed. And that was very enlightening because it really taught me a lot about the bottom line. Because in addition to providing strong customer service and making sure we're able to obtain repeat business, we also had to do it profitably and at a fair price to our customers. And so that was very informative and useful experience. After working at Irving Burton for about 6 years, I then moved out to North Carolina to become the controller of the Department of Environment, Health, and Natural Resources, where there I was responsible for the day-to-day operations of managing the financial and accounting operations of that department
for about
2 years.
They have mountains, they have valleys, they have oceans, they have rivers. North Carolina is a fantastic state. Wow, I wonder why you left. What a state. I love North Carolina.
I do too. It was a beautiful state, and indeed the department that I worked in actually covered everything from A to Z, as they like to say, from the autopsies to the zoo. And we covered it all. And it was very enlightening. And that gave me experience working in the operational realm. You know, I started out as an auditor evaluating procedures and other people. Now I was the auditee.
So you were a pitcher in the National League, pitcher in the American League, and then a utility infielder for a while in the Farm League.
That's about right. And and so I got the taste of what it was like to be audited. And
I think under the microscope,
right?
Huh? Yeah.
And so that gave me a sense of empathy and really helps me, and at least for me, to understand the challenges that folks in the that are performing their duties day to day conducting their programs and delivering services, just the challenges that they have, and then to be saddled with the burdens of being audited, because as much as we try to reduce the burden of being audited, an audit does create burdens and challenges for the audited organization. And so that gave me a good understanding of what that burden is and how to try to reduce. And we obviously can't eliminate it, but certainly try to make it more palatable and agreeable to the auditee.
And somewhere along the way, you picked up a CPA, a certified internal auditor, and a certified IT systems auditor, along with many other certifications, I'm sure. So you get pretty well qualified.
Right, and a master's degree from George Washington University School of Applied Sciences in Information Management. Mm. And as we go into the work I do at GAO, which is focusing on information security, cybersecurity issues, I first started doing that work way back in Army Audit. I became part of their first ever core EDP core group. And that was like we were the first auditors to get laptops, but they weren't laptops at those time. They were more like the huggable luggables, these suitcase size devices that we use and uploaded some data to it and then run queries against it to run various different sources.
Okay. We're both of a certain age. We can tell this story. It used to be that they would have compact portable computers, and the selling point was we could stand on top of one. Remember those? Yeah.
Which made it easier to get the audit reports from on the top shelf to pull down to review.
This is really hard to put. You'd stand on these things. That's how clunky they were. So you've got the yin and the yang. You've got various geographic locations. You've got under the microscope, looking at the microscope. You've got state. You've got local. You've got commercial. You're like an all-star here. You got a real good background for this job you have.
Or I'm a journeyman auditor that gets traded from team to team.
I guess you can look
at either way But yes, I really do appreciate the career that I've had and the opportunities it's provided. And it's all led me to GAO. Where I now, next year, I'll be working there for 20 years. And I have to say, GAO is probably the best organization, not probably, it is the best organization that I've worked at. One of the things I really appreciate about GAO is just the meaningfulness of the work that we do. I really appreciate the folks that I work with. They're all of very high quality and are very much incentivized as well as motivated to do much good for the American people.
And I think that is the origin behind the organization. You know, I mean, we've all read the surveys. What are the best places to work? Well, the best place to work is GAO. Well, I mean, there's some reason for that. And this is, I don't want to toss out this word altruistic because it's a fancy word. But, you could be say that what you guys are doing is making sure my tax money doesn't get thrown down the drain somewhere. I mean, you're protecting my taxes there, huh?
That's right. You know, our nickname is the Congressional Federal Watchdog because we follow where the federal tax dollars go, how they're spent, how well they're being used to deliver services to the public and providing the mission functions of the federal government.
What we'd like to do is maybe take a little break. When we come back, we can talk about, this is great. There's all kinds of HR audits. There's all kinds of audits for this and that. And what we're going to focus in now is information technology and what my listeners should expect or not expect or what kind of audits you can provide or not provide and why you'd select certain organizations or agencies for audits and why you wouldn't and what time frame is involved. And maybe just give some guidelines on what to do, how to prepare for an audit, because I think, In the regular commercial world, if I'm talking to my neighbor and he says, oh, the IRS is going to audit me, that's time to get jumpy and scared and hire a good lawyer or a good accountant. And I think that's that can happen in the federal government as well. Just the word itself is kind of threatening. And you're certainly not a threatening gentleman here, Greg. And maybe we can dispel some of these nasty rumors about the GAO and help people get prepared.
I think nasty might help. Rumors
nasty
about
rumors.
GAO?
Come on. There's none of those. Come on. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Greg Wilshusen, Director of Information Security Issues at the GAO. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Greg Wilshusen, Director of Information Security Issues at the GAO. And lo and behold, if you go to Twitter, there's a handle at USAGAO, isn't there? I mean, incredible, So up to speed with a lot of different things. They have an office in a very trendy part of Washington, D.C. So if you're thinking about working for the federal government, this is the place to be. It's between G and H around 4th, isn't it? Is that what the big building is?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And it's apparently it was a bad place 20 years ago, and it's a fantastic place now because all my students want to live in that neighborhood because there's a Walmart there, there's a Whole Foods, there's coffee shops. It's a pretty good place to be, isn't it?
And the Verizon Center is right there as well.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the catalysts for the redevelopment of that area.
Oh, I think so, too. I think the Abe Pollin really gets stars because mm-hmm. Well, I'm just pitching, trying to get people to work for you. So
well, we appreciate that.
I think it's a good place to work, and it's many different areas. So we talked about your background, talked about the GAO. So tell us about the type of audits you perform and how you select your targets and how my listeners should prepare.
Okay, be happy to. First of all, as your listeners may know, GAO is part of the legislative branch of government. We work for the Congress, and our whole reason for existence is to help Congress discharge its constitutional responsibilities. And we do that by performing audits, evaluations, studies, and actually rendering legal opinions on certain matters as well. As far as information security audits, just about all of our audits are either requested by a member of Congress or is mandated in a statute. And so we do very little work that we initiate on our own.
So let me draw a quick parallel here. Like the Supreme Court doesn't go sniff around for cases. What they do, they have cases presented to them. And you're similar to that is that you don't go sniff around for trouble. If the Congress says, hey, go after this agency and this particular problem, and you go after them.
We do work on a day-to-day basis with our clients and staff up on Capitol Hill, and we give them ideas and also work with them in developing requests, or sometimes we review proposed legislation and provide our 2 cents worth on that, which they, of course, are free to use or not to use. And so it's not like we're just sitting back waiting for Congress to provide requests. We do work with them and try to influence their requests and that sort. But we do receive requests from the Hill or in legislation that is passed and enacted. And so once we have that, we look at the actual individual request, and then it really depends upon what type of audit or review is being requested. One of the great things about information security and information technology audits is that the scope of our work can expand anywhere from being across the entire federal government to look at some emerging trend or issue that affects all federal agencies, or we can be looking at and examining the information security program and controls at a particular agency, where we drill down and go quite deep into looking at the security over their systems and information. And so depending upon the type of audit and the scope of that audit and what our objectives are goes into determining what our methodology will be for performing that work. But what agencies can expect if we are coming in to do an information security audit at that agency, let's just say, for example, our objective is to evaluate and assess the effectiveness of the agency's information security program and controls in protecting the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of their information and information systems. And this is one of the types of audits that we often do at various agencies, at multiple agencies each year. What they can expect is once we start this audit, we will send them an audit notification letter outlining what our objectives are, when we would like to start, and the names of points of contact that they can reach out to in order to gain additional information about that audit. We then try to arrange what is known as an entrance conference with that auditee, where we meet with either their leadership, and particularly for our type of audits and information security, hopefully the chief information officer, chief information security officers, and other personnel will be present during that opening meeting where we explain our methodology, what our objectives are, the source, why we're doing this work. It's because we were requested by a certain member of Congress or committee. We would provide a list of documents and information that we would ask the agency to provide to us so we can start our work. And I might add, too, just in terms of the work that we do, Across federal agency, we, in information security audits, we support a lot of different congressional committees and subcommittees. You know, as of during this year, we are performing work for 20 full committees or and 13 subcommittees across the Congress. We either have ongoing work or planned work to support those committees. So there's a great deal of interest up on Capitol Hill in the cybersecurity area. And it's something that we think is very important. It's something that one of the reasons why we devote our resources to assessing how well agencies protect the information that is entrusted to them, either by American citizens or their own sensitive information that the agencies develop, which can be anything from national security information, medical information, employee information, personally identifiable information, and even business proprietary information from businesses that provide information to that agency.
So my guess is you run 3,000 employees, something is a fair number, 3,000, 3,500 about.
Yes, we have about 3,000 employees. They're the majority of them, about 71%, are located in our headquarters next to Chinatown, with the balance being spread across the 11 field offices that we have located throughout the country. Our annual budget is about, I think, $550 to $555 million.
Wow. Earlier in the show, we were telling silly jokes about the Adam Osborne portable computer, and it was called the sewing machine. You could stand on it, and I know it's all silly, but in the last 20 years, things certainly have changed. So how has this entrance conference, how has this changed in the last 20 years? Is this something new? Has this always been done? Or how has your approach to an audit changed in the last 20 years?
Okay. Yeah, the entrance conference has remained. You know, that's our first step. What has changed is just the technologies, the applications, the networks, particularly the complexity of federal information systems and the interconnectedness of those systems with other networks and also external networks. The internet has played a key role in the way that federal agencies deliver services and conduct businesses, but it also introduces risk to its information and information systems. And as part of our information security audit, we look to see how well agencies are protecting, first of all, how well they assess those risks, how they select their controls to mitigate those risks, and then how well they actually implement those controls consistently throughout the organization. And we'll do this through a number of ways. You know, our basic structure, if you will, of an audit is our first thing is we try to gain an understanding of the organization's, of the agency's mission and functions, what its key outcomes are and outputs, what the sensitive critical data it needs in order to perform its mission, in order to deliver its services, and how the confidentiality, integrity, or availability of that information could impact the organization if that confidentiality and integrity is compromised in some way. We then try to gain an understanding of how the organization's IT structure environment is organized, what networks it has, what types of servers they use, the operating systems, what are the key applications that are critical for the agency's success in meeting its mission. We try to then also identify the roles and responsibilities of the various individuals and groups of people that are responsible for maintaining, operating, and implement those systems, and also for designing and implementing security controls into those systems and procedures. So we try to get a basic understanding of the organization and its IT infrastructure, and then identify key control areas that we want to assess how well the agencies are implementing them.
You know, in the commercial world, for example, if a company hires me to do a marketing analysis for them, I will start off when I use the word audit because I'm not scared of that word. When it comes to taxes, I'm scared of it. But when it comes to a company, I'll go to an audit and I'll find a gap. and will be a gap analysis. Mm-hmm. And it's not a threatening word. It's just say, okay, let's take a look at your digital strategy. Well, you have this, this, and this. And by the way, when people go to your website, they can't see it in their smartphone. We're going to have to change. I mean, something that's obvious to an outsider may not be obvious to an insider because they're worrying about silly details. An outsider can see things. Hey, look at this. Your tie's not knotted or something obvious.
Right. And I think that's an excellent point because, you know, a GAO audit is done in accordance with auditing standards. And that's why we call it an audit. It is an evaluation. It is an evaluation of the agency's performance, effectiveness, and efficiency in conducting its operations against stated criteria. But by and large, lots of companies pay big bucks to have someone come in and perform an operational review of their organization, how to make them work better. And that's basically what a GAO audit is. We try to identify, you know, we assess the agency's performance against stated criteria. We identify areas for and opportunities for improvement, and we report on those results. Many of the smart agencies use our results in order to gain additional resources or to gain additional buy-in from top management to help improve their functions and their activities that they need to perform on a day-to-day basis.
Even in the commercial world, if a new CIO or CEO is installed, he'll bring an outsider in and say, what's going on here? And give an opinion, and it's not going to be biased and emotional and say, oh, that John Gilroy's been here 5 years, we like him. No, he's not performing, or something is performing, mm-hmm. isn't performing. But that fresh perspective, that outsider's perspective is really what everyone has to have, because the easiest person to fool is yourself. And if you don't realize you're fooling yourself every day of the week, then you got to have those outsiders. And boy, I've been criticized much in my life. I hope I've been improved by it. And I think that's what it's all about, is looking at it with a fresh set of eyes and saying, have you ever considered, what about this? And you can create new goals or maybe agency long-term objectives.
Absolutely. And it's a lot better for GAO as an outsider to come in and review and provide the service to the agency rather than having some foreign nation or criminal element or hacker or terrorist or even an insider come in and look to identify similar vulnerabilities and exploit them to the agency's detriment.
Let's take a break, come back, talk more about the GAO. Our guest today is Greg Wilshusen, Director of Information Security Issues at the GAO. And we're talking about audits and just guidelines and how to prepare for them. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Greg Wilshusen, Director of Information Security Issues at the GAO. And we're talking in general about audits and information technology audits and cybersecurity and how to repair and what to repair. And I want to toss a curveball in here because I want to talk about birthdays. I have a nephew up in Madison, Wisconsin. It's probably only 80 degrees up there. And he's at the summer program. And his birthday was last week. And I was thinking about another birthday of the OMB hack, which is, I think, about a year ago, too. And in doing my due diligence for this interview, I looked up this gentleman by the name of Greg Wilshusen and heard what he had to say about that. And he said they failed to address safe practices. So is this before an audit or after an audit? Or what's the sequence here with this OMB?
Well, with OMB or OPM?
I'm sorry, OPM, I'm sorry.
Okay. As you know, OPM was hacked by outsiders and that collected quite a bit of information on federal employees and those that had background investigations. At a hearing last May, I believe it was, it came out that a couple of the factors that contributed to the OPM hack, according to the, was the fact that the attackers were able to obtain user ID and passwords from a contractor of OPM.
Uh-huh.
And were then able to use that to facilitate their attack against the OPM systems. What is interesting about that is at the time, and I believe this also came out at the hearing, is that OPM had not fully implemented what is known as a personal identity verification card or multi-factor authentication for its systems. And had it done so, that might have helped either thwart or at least raise the bar significantly for that attacker to gain access to his systems. My understanding, based upon information that OPM has reported to OMB and that OMB actually reported in its March 2016 FISMA report for fiscal year 2015 that OPM has made progress and is a significant progress in implementing multi-factor authentication. And if I may, we are actually performing work right now at OPM in request to a congressional mandate. And while I can't talk about the work and our preliminary results, we do expect to issue a report or at least start finishing that up, most of that audit by the end of this year.
So the sequence is there's a problem, and Congressman from Ohio says, okay, do an audit. Is that the sequence, or was there an audit before then? Was there problems before, or where does this all fit in the range of the audit cycle?
Well, the OPM IG had been conducting audits over OPM's information security programs for a number of years and had identified a number of vulnerabilities associated with that program. And as I recall, some of those findings had not been corrected by OPM and may have contributed to the incident. One thing I will say, you know, as auditors, whether it's the IG or GAO, we perform our work, we write reports, and we make recommendations. And that's all they are. They are recommendations. Those recommendations are up. It's up to the agency whether or not to implement those recommendations. And if they don't implement them, which is fine, you know, but they probably should because there's a reason we're making them. But we also recognize, at least at GAO, that we're not necessarily the font of all knowledge. So if the agency identifies an alternative action that addresses the underlying security vulnerability, that's also okay. We're fine with that. But we do track how well agencies implement our recommendations. In fact, one of our performance measures at GAO is the percentage of recommendations that are implemented after 4 years from when we made those recommendations.
You know, that must be the frustrating part about being a physician. So if John Gilroy walks in the office and he says, John, you're tubby, you got to lose 30 pounds and quit smoking. And then 2 years later, I go back to the same physician. He goes, John, now you got to lose 40 pounds and quit smoking. And the doctor can almost predict what's going to happen. But the arrogant, cocky John Gilroy says, no, I'm not going to take that advice. And so this is an unusual position where you know what the best practice is and you suggest and recommend it. But that's it's a tough position to be in.
It is. But what we're also finding is that agencies, to a large extent, in fact, for IT security weaknesses, and the recommendations that we make, that agencies typically will implement about 90% of our recommendations after 4 years, and which we're very proud of that. And I think it's in part to the way we conduct our audit, the results we have. Again, we're comparing the agency's implementation of security controls against known and stated criteria. We, during the conduct of our audit, we're working hand in hand, if you will, right next side by side with the agency's system administrators, security administrators, as we go through and collect the data from their systems. We do it with them, and we explain why we're looking at certain types of data and the configurations that should be in place in order to secure that system appropriately. The administrators, the organization understands that, and there's usually very little disagreement over the facts of our review and our findings. Sometimes we may not necessarily agree on the effect, but usually those are minor too. And it's through that process where we also, as we will have exit conferences with the agency, where we will give them what we call a statement of facts, which is a listing of all of our findings and the findings and the background of the audit report, and discuss it with them and take their comments. We may modify. They may provide additional information to us, which will allow us to look and assess that information and possibly make revisions to the statement of facts. We then send a draft report containing all of the findings, recommendations to the agency for its review and comment. So they have another bite at the apple, if you will, to assess what it's going to look like in writing, and then we obtain their comments. And their comments, if they provide them in writing, are included verbatim as an appendix in the final report. And we summarize their comments in the body of the report as well. And so that provides a number of opportunities for the agency personnel to understand the work we're performing, how we do it, the results we're identifying, and the recommendations we're making. And that usually lends to, more often than not, concurrence with our recommendations and actions on the part of the agency to implement them.
I'll bet the world-famous Tom Temin, if he got on Jeopardy and you asked him the 90% question, 90% of your recommendations enacted after 4 years, I don't think he'd get that one. I don't think I'd get that one. I would bet 50%. With normal human beings that I know, maybe a physician would convert. I would bet 50%. 90's not shabby.
But with information security, you know, agencies understand to a large extent the risk. And they understand that if their systems are not adequately protected, it can create harm not only to their ability to perform their mission, to protect the safety perhaps and privacy of their individuals, as well as the reputation, but also the impact it could have on the American people.
Yeah, and they get maybe a weakened score, they get egg in their face, and their chance of getting promoted. So now it makes a little more sense for me that someone gives you recommendations to do and you enact them, and 90% clip, that's not bad at all. When I look at commercial information technology folks, and I ask what they're concerned with, they talk about real similar topics. They talk about alignment, they talk about privacy, they talk about reacting and adapting to change. They also talk about time to market, but most govies don't talk about that. But what's fascinating is that many of the commercial CIOs are interested in the real similar type topics that the CIOs today are interested in. And I think that's where your work is applied, is applying that. If someone is interested in FITARA implementation or modernization, perhaps some of your comments, remarks can assist them in that transition.
Well, indeed, you know, as they go to employ new technologies within their organizations, one thing it's important to remember as they do that is to try to build security into those new technologies. And that may involve not just the technology itself, but the business practices of the organization as well. It's important to realize that information security is not just a technology issue. It's a people issue, and it's a process issue, a business issue as well.
Many, many issues. Let's take a break. Come back, talk more about audits and the GAO. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, Greg Will Schussen, Director of Information Security Issues at the GAO. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Greg Will Schussen, Director of Information Security Issues at the GAO. We've been talking about audits, what they're all about, what they're not all about. You can actually follow Twitter information on audits. You can go to @USAGAO. If you want to follow me, you can follow me @RayGilray, which is a strange handle, I know, but that's my handle on Twitter. I'm on Twitter a lot more than people think. I follow for topics. It's almost becoming a tool for journalists because you can see trends of information and follow. And if you follow the right people like Greg, I would follow you if you were on there because then we get the straight scoop and you don't get, if you follow the right people, you get a lot of information on Twitter. What people always ask is silly questions. They ask me silly questions in person. I'll have someone like Greg in the studio, CPA, auditor, years of experience, and they'll say, now, what kind of phone does that guy have? And so I've come up with a scientific 10-question test to find out if Greg is actually a card-carrying nerd or not. So, Greg, you ready for this test?
I am.
Let's go. Do you have an Instagram account?
No.
How many cell phones have you impulsively purchased in the last year for yourself?
Zero.
Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
No.
You're sinking fast, buddy. You have a Snapchat account?
No.
Do you at least, what kind of smartphone do you have?
I do have an Android personal phone, and GAO gives us an iPhone that uses iOS.
Yeah. You know the joke in the airport in Chicago is, how do you know the govy got two phones?
And both of them are probably outdated.
Outdated. Well, you're not getting too good in this test. What's the most popular app in that phone in the last 30 days?
Probably Google.
Oh, it's boring, boring, boring. And we break into your house tonight. How many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
Zero.
Wow. You're more normal than nerdy, but you got three questions to pull out of this one. When was your most recent post in social networking?
Probably back in September 2015.
No. We're not even going to bring this. And I look at
it. That was for my 40th high school reunion to see when it's going to be and that I plan to attend.
You got a long sleeve shirt on, so I can't. Is that an Apple Watch I see in your arm there?
Actually, I don't wear a watch. And I have to say, maybe I shouldn't, but it would be, I don't really understand watches that have these different functions because I have a hard enough time just reading my monitor without reading glasses. I don't know how to read anything on a one-inch square
watch face.
This is
the final question. You got to save this one. The last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
Paper. I love paperbacks. I like the feel of the book.
I'm going to do
it. And I like the dog ear pages.
Well, that was an audit that I just did on your nerdiness. You failed miserably. I mean, you're not even nerd points anywhere.
Yeah, after work.
My goodness.
But, I have to say, after work, I like to disconnect. And I like to go for a walk around the neighborhood or bicycle around the neighborhood with my wife, go swimming at the community pool, not to get online. Mm-hmm. And I like to converse with people, not necessarily text message with them.
Wow, this is not a good sign. This is not a good sign. I'll come up with my audit report. What I'll do is I'll get an entrance conference with your boss and then an exit conference and report on, this guy's no nerd. Yeah, that'll be something. On your Twitter feed, your organization's Twitter feed, I saw something very interesting, and maybe you can comment on it. And this is a little phrase, what gets measured gets done.
Indeed.
Isn't that interesting? Someone from a CPA and an auditor's background. So maybe the activities that you start is the start of measuring different types of cybersecurity activities that have to be done.
That's exactly right. That's one of the things that we look at when we examine agencies' information security program, in particular, like across the federal government. And this probably pertains to any program that the federal government has. It's not just information security, but how does the agency know it's doing a good job and it's successful in what it does? What type of measures or metrics is it using to measure its performance and to gauge how well and successful it's doing? And what we often find is that agencies are often very good at measuring their output, how many widgets, how many reports, how many cases they file, but they're not necessarily identifying how well or how effectively they're performing that mission. What are their outcomes? It's very difficult for an agency, and indeed, it's difficult to measure an outcome. Is your output having the desired effect? And sometimes that's difficult to measure.
When Tony Scott speaks, journalists and people write down everything he says. He could talk about, pinch hitter for the Nationals, and we'd write it down. He talks about the importance of FITARA implementation. And FITARA is kind of a scoreboard, maybe a reflection, maybe it's a failed to what gets measured gets done. And so where does FITARA fit in with you? What do you think of it personally, and how does it help agencies, and what do you think from an auditor's perspective?
Well, I think it helps CIOs in that it gives them responsibility for a number of very specific actions and activities. To the extent that it may also impact chief information security officers within that is another possibility in terms of what those CISOs are responsible for doing. We're actually conducting a review right now. It's a government-wide survey and examination of the roles and responsibilities of the chief information security officers and what their how well the agency defines their roles and responsibilities and how that aligns with the guidance provided in federal law and federal policy. And also to identify some of the challenges that those CISOs face and need to confront in order to perform those roles and responsibilities. We expect that report to come out later this year.
We both have been around, and we joked earlier about these old-style desktop portable computers that are very large and clunky. But there's been a lot of change. And I think one of the challenges with CISOs now is if a year ago they were all up to speed, all of a sudden you have this wave of IoT, get this wave of big data, everything's in, all of a sudden, what was valid last year is not valid today. It's almost like it's a treading water, just trying to keep up with all the change and implementation. And maybe an audit has to be reviewed 1 or 2 years later because everything's going to be changing.
That's absolutely right. And that's what we often find, too, is that, you know, even though our audits are typically as of a point in time or during the audit period, which is usually dates certain, once we issue our report and our recommendations, clearly the environment is not static. It is very dynamic. You have evolving and more sophisticated threats, cyber threats that agencies and CISOs need to deal with. You have changing business practices, emerging technologies which are being introduced into the environment. There's this constant state of dynamism in that computing environment, and the vulnerabilities are exploding as well. The National Vulnerability Database, for example, has identified over 78,500 vulnerabilities or 78,200 vulnerabilities that agencies and CISOs need to assure that the software that they have is adequately protected, patched, and is supported by the vendor. And so that's an ongoing evolution that agencies need to consistently address. And that's something that's been very challenging. So what might be pertinent today may be less so a year from now, 2 years from now, even less.
I'll ask the sensitive question here, and I won't even use an agency by name. Let's say there's an agency called the Department of the Exterior. And Congress says, Greg, go after them and do this audit for whatever it happens to be. And who pays for what? I mean, this is a question. I mean, who gets saddled with that charge?
Well, typically we have our own appropriations where GAO will pay, if you will, for the audit. But in some cases, when we're doing audits of financial statements at federal agencies and our team assesses the security controls over the financial systems and information at that system, in some agencies, that cost is then borne by the agency. But I think it's very important, and GAO is reimbursed for its services. But I think it's important to remember that ultimately, it's the American taxpayer that pays for our reviews and it pays for the functioning and operations of the government. And it's up to us at GAO, as it is up to the federal government and each federal agency, to maximize the effectiveness and efficiency of its operations to perform its mission and deliver services to its constituency for the benefit of the American people, because that is who we are serving.
And we started the interview with that, and we're going to end the interview with that. And it's my tax money. I want to make sure it's spent effectively. And this is seems to be a very efficient and effective way to do this. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Greg Wilshusen, Director of Information Security Issues at the GAO. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.